Danon Nutritia Campus is an open science education platform for healthcare professionals overseen by a not-for-profit foundation. The foundation is led by an independent board of medical professionals and academics with one clear goal: to advance the field of nutrition and health from infancy to old age through growing knowledge, training and education of healthcare professionals around the world in collaboration with medical and scientific communities.
Welcome and hello. I'm Dr. Roseanne Meyer, paediatric dietitian and honorary senior lecturer at Imperial College, London, UK, and visiting professor also at KU Leuven in Belgium. Today we will be discussing gut and immune health, the safety and added value of pre and symbiotics, and the nutrition of allergic infants. We had a really fantastic interaction during our recent webinar on this topic, and today we will be addressing questions asked but not addressed during the live streaming in June 2020. It is my great pleasure to introduce my partners for discussion, which are Professor Udo Hertz and Professor Seppo Salminen.
Thanks a lot, Roseanne, for that introduction. I'm actually Udo Hertz. I'm working at Danone Nutritia, and I'm one of the global medical directors based in Amsterdam.
Thank you, Roseanne, for the kind introduction. I'm Seppo Salminen. I'm professor at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Turku in Finland, and I'm also the president of the International Scientific Association of Probiotics and Prebiotics.
Without further ado, let's jump in and discuss some common questions from healthcare professionals regarding the use of biotics in allergy prevention and management. So the first section of the questions we have really is around the modulation of the gastrointestinal microbiota and immunity. And Udo, I'm going to jump off and ask a question to you. So 70 to 80% of immune cells develop in the gut. What type of immune cells mature in the gut?
So actually, together with the skin, the gut indeed makes the biggest surface of our body to our external world. So therefore, it's not a surprise that the vast majority, up to 70-80% of the immune cells, are organized around the gut. They are organized around the gut in the GALT, in the gut-associated lymphoid tissue. And in that organ system, you find actually all the immune cells which are important to mount an appropriate immune response against infections, against pathogens, but also against allergens. And you find there cells of the first line of defense of the innate immune system, which are the macrophage and the antigen-presenting cells, and but also cells of the second line of defense of the adaptive immune system, which are T cells and B cells.
Thank you for that answer. And Udo, I'm going to jump into a next question, which is particularly addressed to you. So how does, therefore, the mode of delivery impact on the immunity of the child?
So the mode of delivery has indeed an impact on gut colonization, which is associated with strength of the immune response. And until birth, the infant gut is actually sterile. There are no bacteria. So bacteria are acquired from our environment, and thereby our adaptation to our environment happens through that acquisition. Our normal environment is rich in certain bacteria, and we all know of the bifido effect of the bifidi colonization early in infancy. So now, mode of delivery, and especially caesarean section, is associated with the adaptation and the acquisition of a gut microbiota, which is different from that environment, from this natural environment. Some people talk about an hospitalized gut colonization. Some people talk about an adult type microbiota. I think the most important is it is different. It is not our natural environment.
So if we move to the next question, which is still related to the modulation of the GI microbiota and immunity. And it's a question to, I think, both of you. I'm going to first address it to Seppo and then Udo jump in. But the question is an imbalance in the gut microbiota seen in infants at risk and with cow's milk allergy? Is this imbalance linked to other disease, such an inflammatory bowel disease, for example, that you have this imbalance that are they have cow's milk allergy? Does it later on lead to, for example, inflammatory bowel disease? Seppo, do you know if there's any research on this topic?
Yes, Rosanne, I think it's a very important question and something that unfortunately needs a little bit more clarification in the future. We know now that the imbalance or dysbiosis that is present in the infant gut is certainly linked with the risk of cow milk allergy, and it's likely to be linked with other non-communicable diseases as well. But this further link is something that we are actually intensively studying at the moment.
Yeah, and Udo, from your side?
I think gut microbiota, colonization, diversity, type of colonization, timing of colonization is a interesting area at the moment, not only for disease. Many diseases are actually associated, especially non-communicable diseases are associated with dysbiosis as well in the development, but also in the resolution of diseases. I find one example which is related to metabolism striking. Obesity. Obesity is also to some extent a disease, an inflammatory disease. And actually, the type of microbiota is to determine whether somebody gets obese or maintains obese, or whether he can actually lose weight, at least in experiments with animals. It is very nicely shown that if you replace the microbiota with another type, with another diversity, mice get lean.
Yeah, and I think I agree with both of you. It's an exciting research area, but I think more needs to be done. We have some observational data already now, non-IgE-mediated cow's milk allergy, observing that you have a higher level of irritable bowel disease later on. But I think we need to think more, but I think it's exciting also to think about all the possibilities with the new research to explore these type of other diseases. Again, a question for both of you. Udo, I'm going to start with you first on this question, then Seppo, just add on to what you think. Is antibiotic use associated with an imbalance in the gut microbiota?
It's an excellent question. I like first to say antibiotics are important. Antibiotics have a health benefit, and antibiotics are needed. So it's not about to ban antibiotic use where it is needed. I think what is discussed and what appears is the unnecessary use of antibiotics and the frequent use of antibiotics, especially in the first year of life, has an impact, not only on gut microbiota, by the way, but definitely also on gut microbiota development. And if there is a risk-benefit recommendation, surely antibiotics need to be used and should be prescribed where they are needed. But the unnecessary prescription should be avoided.
And Seppo, have you got anything to add to this answer from Udo?
Well, first of all, I completely agree with Udo. And we have to remember that the first year of life is really crucial. And to have antibiotics with the target, with an identified target, is important. And antibiotics are needed, as Udo already mentioned. But quite often antibiotics are also used just in case. And especially during the first year of life, repeated antibiotic doses, they actually change the way the microbiota will develop later on. So you can, for one antibiotic during the first year of life, you can perhaps return back to normal development. But the more prescriptions there are during the first year or maybe even the second year, the more diverse and the more dysbiosis is going to be observed later on. And that will certainly have then different outcomes for the child.
Thank you both for those excellent answers. We're moving to the next question, and this one is specifically, Seppo, for you. When is the opportunity for gut microbiota modulation, which I think links in very much with your answer now, and does it begin in pregnancy, and when does it end? Does it ever end?
Well, a very crucial question again, Rosanne. Thank you very much for this question. It's important to notice that the beginning of microbiota modulation, I think it should start during pregnancy. Maybe at times already before pregnancy or when pregnancy is planned, because to develop the healthy gut microbiota for the infant, we need a healthy gut microbiota for the mother too. And modulation, in case there are problems, in case there are diseases that are linked to gut microbiota, they can be started already before delivery. And it continues very strongly during breastfeeding as well, especially if you have disturbances like antibiotics or other drugs. It is important to remember that we tend to consider mostly antibiotics when we think of dysbiosis or problems in the gut microbiota. But practically every drug that has been tested is going to influence the gut microbiota development as well. So I would try to check it with the current methods as well as possible, and then look for the options before, during pregnancy, and even during breastfeeding. And Rosanne, you asked, does it ever end? No, I don't think it ever ends.
Yeah, when does it end? When does it end? Or does it ever end, this influence or the gut microbe, the modulation of it?
I think it's a lifelong process, especially if you cannot, if you have diseases, if you travel, change from one country to a country, you have external challenges. And we need to take care of our gut microbiota also during adult life and during the older years. So I think it's a lifelong process, and we can modulate in different manner throughout life. And especially always when symptoms and signs of dysbiosis appear.
Thank you for that excellent answer. So we're now actually coming to a question that is addressed to me as the dietitian of our three, which is, can pre-probiotics modulate the gut microbiota in infants at risk and with cow's milk allergy? That's an excellent question. And I think the evidence is now guiding towards us that this is certainly possible, that we can modulate. And there's quite a lot of studies that indicate that with the supplementation of pre-probiotics, symbiotics, we can actually modulate the bacterial flora of the child, not only at risk, but those with cow's milk allergy, to bring them closer to microbiota of a child that is breastfed. So we're now moving to the next group of questions, and these are particularly around breastfeeding. So the first very important question is addressed to you, Seppo. So the gastrointestinal microbiota of the healthy breastfed infant is often described, you know, as the gold standard. So that is the microbiota that you've got. What are the key features of the microbiota of the breastfed infant?
That's a very challenging question, Rosanne. I think there are several key features, and one is certainly that you have normal vaginal delivery without any problems, and then you start breastfeeding and continue breastfeeding as recommended, you will see relative diversity, which is age appropriate. I think the important thing is to look at age appropriate changes. So we need some diversity early on, but not too diverse. And the presence of breast milk bacteria, they influence the development. They influence also the immune development, as Udo mentioned before. So Among the important players are lactobacilli and bifidobacteria. And quite often we actually have them together. The certain type of microbiota containing lactobacilli also favors bifidobacteria. And in many disturbances that we look at later, bifidobacterial dysbiosis is a main factor. So most of the times there are too few bifidobacteria, and sometimes the species composition is not right. But lactobacilli and bifidobacteria, these form the protective elements during breastfeeding, and they are associated with the balanced diet development. So I think those are actually forming together the gold standard features of breastfeeding, and then combined with the other microbiota modulating factors such as the human milk oligosaccharides and immune factors in breast milk. So there is no one gold standard, but there are several gold standards which are age appropriate and depending on the environment that the infant and the mother are living.
Thank you for that excellent question, and I agree it's a really complicated question that that one of our listeners posed. So Seppo, I'm going to continue with you. It's I suppose you've partly answered this question already, but the question is, are there pre and probiotics in breast milk? And if the answer is yes, where do they come from?
Oh, an excellent question, Rosanne. There are large numbers of bacteria in human milk. And yes, as discussed earlier, lactobacilli and bifidobacteria, lactic acid bacteria together form the basis of the human milk microbiota. That can change and vary depending on what kind of diet is there, what kind of living habits the mother has, but bacteria are always there. Where do they come from? That's another challenging question. We know that some of them are certainly derived from the gut microbiota of the mother. Some of them are from the surface of the breast, from skin bacteria. But some of them are apparently also transferred from other parts of the body to the breast tissue, because we see bacteria if we take a sample of the breast tissue of the breastfeeding mother. And all those sources together, they form the microbiota that is, again, dependent on the environment and dependent on the age of the infant as well. And of course, the volume plays a role. Then human milk oligosaccharides, again, the composition is related to the genetics of the mother and to the environment. And human milk oligosaccharides are synthesized by the mother and secreted through milk, while the microbes are mostly thought to derive from the mother's gut. So all those things together actually form a basis for what we call then probiotics and prebiotics, because the human milk oligosaccharides are basically prebiotic components working for the benefit of the health of the infant. And in the same way, the bacteria in human milk, they help in colonizing the infant gut with the right type of bacteria. They are age appropriate again, and they are depending on the environment. So they form the protective elements for the environment that the infant is living in.
Thank you very much for that answer. I'm sure it will give our listeners a lot of time to think about it. So I think we're moving to still on breast milk, but I think it's you've highlighted the importance of the mother and the mother's diet. And this next question, I think, is for both of us. And what can mothers do to improve the quality of their breast milk? Seppo, before I jump in, what do you think mothers can do to improve the quality of their breast milk?
Well, it is an interesting question that healthy diets and healthy lifestyle also influence the composition of the breast milk. So I would say that we have nutrition recommendations or dietary guidelines on what a pregnant mother and a breastfeeding mother, how they should handle their diet. And exercise and a healthy diet, they are reflected in the quality of breast milk. And even in the nutritional quality, if we think about changing a fat source, for instance, in the mother's diet, we will see concomitant changes quite rapidly also in the breast milk fat composition. And fat, on the other hand, is influencing the bacterial composition, the surface fatty acids of the bacteria. So from my point of view, healthy lifestyles are important factors for improving also the breast milk quality.
Yeah, and I think I can totally agree with that. I want to add to this question, not only about the quality but also the quantity. And I, for those listeners, and saying it's really important outside of a healthy diet, the message that you can actually influence the quality and the micronutrients of your milk through the omega-3 fatty acids, for example, vitamin D content. So it's really important that we follow the guidelines also in regards to what mothers need from a supplementation perspective. I'm thinking also in particular in relation to cow's milk allergy. So there is significant variation in iodine content we now see with mothers who are eliminating cow's milk. So that's really important that we think of the mother's diet. I also think it's important we often forget the mother's psychological state. Sleep, stress, fluid consumption, all of that can also not influence the quality, but also the quantity. And I think both of those are really important. So I think that was an excellent question. The next question is also to me as the dietitian, and it's related to first-line management of cow's milk allergy in breastfed infants with maternal elimination of cow's milk protein. Do you recommend giving probiotics to breastfed infants at risk or with cow's milk allergy? So the answer, first of all, there is that breast milk itself is a fantastic source of pre and probiotics. So that's the first important point, is to say promote breastfeeding. But the answer is that there's some research that has come through to show that in breastfed infants, one can prevent in particular atopic dermatitis. There's some good research from that perspective. And if in regards to children who have cow's milk allergy, I often also recommend, depending on their symptoms, I recommend a probiotic as well in my cow's milk allergic children. Certainly the most important question to ask yourself, can it do harm? And the answer is no, it cannot do harm. It can only be of benefit in regards to normalizing the microbiome and getting it closer to a child without food allergies. We've had many questions come through in regards to the management of cow's milk allergy when breast milk is not available. So in regards to using a formula. And the first question, Uda, was regarding in particular what you mentioned through the webinar, is that you presented the use of formula containing specific symbiotic blend. Rebalances the GI microbiota in the infant at risk and with cow's milk allergy. And in particular, that this blend kind of brings the microbiota more similar to a baby that's breastfed. What is the clinical effect, and can we prevent or cure cow's milk allergy? Which I think what we're all trying to achieve, but I think it's an excellent question.
Yeah, thank you very much. It actually goes to the heart of the whole pre and pro symbiotic concept. So if you look into cow's milk allergy from an immunological point of view, you have actually two phases. One is the immediate acute reaction, the acute inflammation, which we manage with hypoallergenic. So we take away the allergen stimulus, and the disease and the symptoms more or less resolve within sometimes 12, 48 hours, sometimes a little bit longer, 3-4 days. But that is only one piece of the disease which we address. There is a second piece which takes much more longer, and that is the late phase inflammation, the chronification of the disease, and that we need to address, and we benefit from addressing that. And how we address that is through the gut microbiota, through giving a stimulus to rebalance the dysbiosis. That is actually what we are doing. And yes, resolution of the symptoms, resolution of carcinogenic allergy, especially acquisition of tolerance, so overcoming actually carcinogenic allergy, is associated with a kind of a normalization of a gut microbiota. And that is what we want to achieve, and that what is actually what we observe. Many people ask then, is that a profound effect? That's difficult to answer, because we also see that it takes long. It takes 7 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Management, dietary management of carcinogenic allergy is not a short approach. It is a long journey, as it is a long journey to become allergic. So there is no surprise that it takes long to see some success.
Yeah, it's a complicated question, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But it is actually, we are entering with that in a new area. If we think about the dietary management of carcinogenic allergy with hyperallergenic formula, with amino acid formula, is very, very old. 70, 80 years ago, the first hyperallergenic formulas were coming on the market. And fundamentally, in the principle of the management, nothing has dramatically changed. Only after now, introducing prebiotics, introducing probiotics, introducing now, bringing those together, we enter a next phase, a real innovative phase in the dietary management of carcinogenic allergy. So it is exciting, which will come. We are not at the end of the journey. We are at the beginning of the journey.
So the next question, Udo, is again addressed to you. It's I think you've partly answered it, but I think it's such an important clinical question. And it's related to, you know, in the webinar, you presented the symbiotic blend, you know, the specific blend of the prebiotic oligosaccharides and the probiotic strain, you know, the Bifidobacterium breve, conveyed benefits to the GI microbiota over an 8-week study period. Now, I see that as well. Parents want, yeah, they want a very quick improvement, and they want to see the benefits very quickly. So how quickly after starting, you know, a blend with symbiotics, would you expect clinical improvements? I'm not talking about the microbiota. And how long should we be advising parents before they see any changes?
Yeah. Yeah, that is a tricky question, sir. So I would say the clinical benefit is immediately there, but the question is whether we see it, whether we really can measure it. A 6-week or 8-week study observation time was chosen because that was the time we looked at it. You could also look shorter or longer, but the effect is also individually dependent. I like to point out that there are responder, which with all drugs and management, which respond more quickly, more pronounced, and there are less responder within a study group, and you see a median effect, which we see now in at this 8-week and which prolongs. The expectation of parents is very high because the pressure is very high. They have a long journey behind them of hip-hopping to different doctors, having different management, different treatments, different advice, and sometimes the frustration is quite high. I think it is important to remind the best management is you stick to the advice and to the product what you are giving. Hip hopping doesn't only make it worse, and the success will come.
Yeah, and I think here to support you from that perspective, I think there are two questions. It's about the clinical response, and in my experience, you know, in IgE mediated allergy, it's a very quick clinical response. It takes slower in the non-IgE gut patients, but it is like all of these things. There's a little bit of patience and swapping around. I totally agree is not useful. So we're moving on now to a question. I'm going to address it first to Seppo, but I can certainly support the answer from that perspective. Seppo, you know, some cow's milk allergy formulas have one HMO, so one human milk oligosaccharide, and there is a recent study on the benefit of two. So do you think HMOs are the future of allergy outgrowth? So I'm assuming the question is, it's the future of tolerance induction, or is it symbiotics?
Well, Rosanne, a very good question again. And we now need to look into the future. We know today that there are over 200 different human milk oligosaccharides in breast milk. And the quantities vary. They are really depending on the genetics of the mother and other factors related to the environment. So we have now one or two that are approved for use in Europe. Actually, a third one was approved as well, either alone or in combination. And there are very few studies available at the moment. So it's quite challenging to say that you could do this type of work now. But I do see that when we combine the human milk oligosaccharides and when we actually identify what kind of composition is related to the development of allergy, then the future might actually have a tolerance building by using human milk oligosaccharide compositions, specific compositions for the specific type of microbiota that needs also to be identified. But at the moment, I think both pro and prebiotics are okay, and we have evidence for them. So that means that symbiotics are important, but also there we need to learn a little bit more about how to use them in different microbiota dysbiotic conditions. Yeah.
I totally agree. And I think always when I get a question like that and saying, I think we're on the right path, but we still need to learn a little bit more. So if I move to next one, this is a very, I think it's an important question. Seppo, we're going to start with you. What do you think about specific strains, so Lactobacillus rhamnosus, GG? And I'm going to bring it in context of allergy prevention and children with cow's milk allergy.
Also a very important question. Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG was one of the first probiotics that was intensively studied, and perhaps it is one of the most studied probiotics for different targets, different uses. I would say that it's still one of the key probiotics, but we have to watch for things like production method and growth media, which influence the strain properties. All of the studies that we have seen over the years, the results are always strain specific, and quite often even closely related strains don't bring up the same result. So it needs good quality control, it needs good stability, and certainly we have demonstrated in eczema prevention good results, but. What goes beyond that, I think, needs further studies. And we also need to consider how science has accumulated and produced different strains to be used for the same purpose, and also bifidobacterial strains. So it's on the way to the right direction, as you said for the previous question.
Yeah, I think also from, you know, there's the research side, and I think we as clinicians often sit in a situation where the parents are demanding we want a probiotic, and they think one probiotic fits every type of condition. And I think we have a role also here to educate. And a question that I'm often asking myself, and that in particular in terms of lactobacillus rhamnosus, is if I were to give it, is there evidence? And also, can I do harm in clinical practice? And I think that's an important question, because if we as healthcare professionals say, no, don't use it also, I know they will go and find somebody else that will advise them, and they often get advice that might not be, you know, optimal. So I think we are on a journey, but, you know, I agree, most probably Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG is the one that in my clinical practice I use the most, because also we have a lot of safety studies from that perspective. So if we move to the next question, that's for both of you. Udo, as Seppo has done a lot of talking, I'm going to start with you for the next question. So could you list some examples of postbiotics and its function? And there's a second part to this question. And are there any data about postbiotic efficacy in cow's milk allergic children? Complicated.
Yeah, thank you very much. So let me first, before I answer that, explain what postbiotics are. We heard about prebiotics in human milk, non-digestible carbohydrates. We heard about probiotics, so live bacteria also in human milk, so which we bring into infant formula. And now postbiotics is a third component of this biotic family. Postbiotics are actually the products what bacteria produce. As we have probiotics or bacteria in human milk, we find also some postbiotics there. So it's a fermentation product. They come from fermentation of the bacteria. So postbiotics you cannot buy. You need to produce them in a fermentation process by your own, by certain strains. And postbiotics is not one ingredient. It is hundreds of different ingredients. It is all what actually bacteria can produce. Proteins, peptides, lipids, carbohydrates, vitamins, acids, even cellular components, all that is named as postbiotics, as coming from bacteria. And it's actually a very old concept of using postbiotics or fermented product or products which have fermentation and thereby postbiotics in the management of certain diseases. In infant formula specifically, there have been quite some interesting results with formulas having postbiotics included, so fermented products or products from fermentation. Striking results have been observed in response of polio vaccine, so enhancing the IgA response of polio vaccination, but also in the prevention of gastroenteritis or reduction of inflammation and even the prevention of allergy. So also an old concept, it needs much more research to get in. But it is an exciting field and it is an exciting development. So as I said before, we are not at the end of a journey. We are at the beginning of the journey.
Yeah.
And the journey is we are learning from human milk. We are learning from bacteria how all their good benefits, how to translate them into something useful for us.
Fantastic answer there. We had quite a number of questions in regards to selection of biotics. And this is a question for both of you. And Seppo, I'm going to start with you. How do we ensure biotics are delivered to the gut in adequate amounts, given that they must survive the digestive journey? And should we give antacids for improving delivery and efficacy of probiotics?
A very good question again. Usually, food is among the best carriers of different biotics. We could even think about breast milk. It's food, and it's a carrier for probiotics, prebiotics, symbiotics, and postbiotics. And actually, in many ways, it's the best way of doing the transfer of the immunoactive components to the infant himself or herself. I would certainly not give antacids for children unless there is a very specific reason or cause for it, but rather design the food or the carrier as an appropriate vehicle. We have to remember, and as discussed earlier, that all drugs or pharmaceutical products have an impact on microbiota, and so do antacids. We do have information telling that they also influence not only gut microbiota, but they would also influence the breast milk microbiota. So my choice would be food of some kind and without any added pharmaceutical components, unless there is a good reason for it.
Of course. Odo, do you have anything?
I fully agree. I think probiotics, also natural probiotics, they survive the bile. So there is no reason to give antacids to enhance delivery. Actually, the benefit is proven with a certain amount of bacteria based on the daily consumption of the infant. And that is what is to have to be ensured in terms of daily intake, but also in terms of shelf life of a product. So it is always, the benefit is strain specific, the benefit is dose specific, and it is proven in the condition of use in the target population, in the target condition of use, and there is no reason to give supplementation or enhance effects with an antacid therapy or treatment in parallel.
Yeah, and I think we will have a lot of pediatricians who or gastroenterologists where PPI use is quite high. In fact, the new evidence is to the contrary, that actually PPI use may have a detrimental effect on the microbiome. In clinical practice, I always say food. So if you give it as a supplement, give it with food and otherwise in food. So I totally agree. Yeah. I think that's good. So we move to the next question. And Seppo, this is particularly for you. So, and it's related to adults. So formulation advised for adults to treat diarrhea caused due to infection, for example, antibiotics. Can they help infants also? So can you use formulation for adults for infants?
I would certainly not do that myself. I think formulations need to be designed for the group that they are intended on. There is the age question, the dose question. If we consider, for instance, anti-diarrhea or antibiotics, different antibiotics are given to infants and adults. And of course, it's also different doses. So I would select a formulation that is designed for the particular target group, in this case for infants, not for adults. And perhaps I would also make sure that I would use safe preparations, safe lactobacilli and bifidobacteria and oligosaccharides for infant foods.
I think that's an excellent answer. I'm going to move on to a question for both of you, and which is, how does one evaluate which type of preen protic to accept an infant formula? And I think that really fits in nicely, Seppo, with what you've kind of said, where you say specific, you know, need to be quite specific. Udo, I'm going to start with you. So how do you evaluate that?
Yeah, working for a company, I would say that choice has been done for you. The company is looking and evaluating and screening strains and look for the best ones and for the ones which have a profound clinical effect. So there is a pre-screening in which kind of product you use. Surely it's not only about benefit, it is also about safety. I think self-choose, you bypass a little bit the safety and the condition of use and the target population. And I'm not so a big fan of just try and error of products which have maybe worked in other conditions, maybe worked in other health conditions or age populations and then just simply transfer that to infants. I think we should not do that.
Seppo, have you got anything else to add to that?
Well, I think, again, we have to think about what is the healthy breastfed infant gut microbiota like, and look at the profiles and look at the profiles of those who have problems, who have colic or who have diarrhea or some other microbiota associated problem. And then we can actually identify microbial products that can be used to counteract those challenges. And I think we have a very nice system today to select probiotics for different purposes, and also some preclinical tests that indicate what kind of strain we should use in what kind of dose, and perhaps even whether it should be a live bacterium or perhaps a postbiotic inactive bacteria with the metabolites. And once those selection criteria are used, we have actually managed to get quite useful and quite effective probiotics. And when it comes to the safety, which Uda mentioned, it's a very, very important thing. And here I think we have really fantastic work by the regulatory authorities. We have safety assessment procedures from the European Union. We have the qualified presumption of safety list of bacteria that can be used in food products. And all of the probiotics intended for children, infants and children, are assessed from that point of view in Europe and slightly differently in the United States with the Food and Drug Administration and the notification of GRAS, generally recognized as safe bacteria. And we now have on many probiotics also a long experience of use. We have follow-up studies that extend 20 years from delivery now, and quite a long history of use, safe use for many of the probiotics. So I think we are on a very good position, and of course we need to improve it all the time, but we have safe and efficient probiotics and prebiotics and even postbiotics available today.
Thank you both for the excellent answer. Another question that is for me, and that is also an important question, and the question is that, is there a difference in the allergenicity and or gut microbiota benefit of fresh dairy products versus cow's milk based formula? I think similar to the previous answer that I've given on pasteurized versus unpasteurized milk, I think I want to be clear again that any child below the age of one should not be having unpasteurized milk at all. They should be having either breast milk, and if breast milk is not available, a formula milk. From a purely scientific perspective, there are some differences in regards to the processing, of course, of fresh dairy products and cow's milk-based products based on the heating and pasteurization. However, that still does not change anything that fresh cow's milk, and that what I mean by fresh is unpasteurized, should not be given to a child below the age of one. And it should be breast milk or an infant formula. In terms of microbiota, that is exactly what this webinar and also this podcast is about, is that breast milk is very rich in pre and probiotics and is ideal. And if that's not available, we now have got infant formula where there is pre-probiotics or symbiotics to promote a bacterial flora similar to that of a breastfed infant. We're coming now to the end of this podcast on the discussion on gut and immune health, the safety and added value of pre and symbiotics in the nutrition of allergic infants. I want to thank both of you, Udo and Seppo, for this discussion. As always, very lively and very informative. And would like to ask you to each provide a takeaway message on the topic.
Thanks a lot, Roseanne. This was really an interesting podcast. I think my key take out is we are in starting a complete new millennium, a new stage in the dietary management of cow's milk allergy. The last decades were really about hyperallergenicity, about reducing the allergen exposure, having an allergen avoidance concept. Now we are actually moving into an area where we go into a much more active management, which includes the gut as part of the cure of the resolution of the disease. And we apply their ingredients, which are coming naturally from sources like prebiotics, which are fibers, like probiotics, which are bacteria, live bacteria. And we are really combining it and entering a new millennium in the dietary management of cow's milk allergy.
Thank you for that, Udo. It's, of course, a very important takeaway message. And Giuseppe, what would you like the listeners to take away from this?
Roseanne, it's always a pleasure of discussing with you scientific and practical problems. If I want to give one key takeaway, it's actually a little bit broader takeaway from this topic and discussion. I would like to remind all of us that there are always live bacteria, oligosaccharides and fermentation products in human milk. We should always try to find the best ones for infant formula for those mothers who cannot breastfeed for one reason or another. And those infant foods can promote healthy growth and long-term health. The biotic family, pro, pre, synbiotics and postbiotics, offers personalized solution possibilities to everybody.
With future episodes of Danone Nutrition Campus, the Feed podcast, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, or for more educational content from Danone Nutrition Campus, visit www.danonenutritioncampus.org.